Hello there. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're talking AI, data science, machine learning. We've got Sarah Chowdhury. Here she is, Sarah Chowdhury, innovative leader in AI, machine learning, data science. Here's her website, sarahchowdhury.com. She's got blog articles. She's a Forbes Technology Council member. And wow, she's got an incredible story. Let's go to her LinkedIn. So I met Sarah in 2019. We worked together on her role at Arch Insurance. But prior to that, let's go back in time here. So she started as a technical consultant, basically an ETL developer for Safeway Insurance in 2004. She spent a lot of time in the insurance industry, Farmers, and then Duke Energy, Duke Clinical Research, Spectrum, formerly Time Warner Cable, AbbVie, Cisco, Accenture, BB&T, then Arch Insurance. That's when we met. And then COVID hit and we lost touch. And then she was a director of AI and machine learning at Ernst & Young for 4 years. And after that, she's now started several companies of her own. And we'll talk about those. I'm excited to chat with her. Let's dive in. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Blake.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. Until recently, my gosh, the last time we spoke was pre-COVID. We worked together on this.
Yes, pre-COVID. Yeah, exactly.
I think COVID, that's kind of when we lost touch. Like I had twins, life got crazy. Yes. Then you left Arch and went to Ernst & Young. And then next thing I know, cut two, you have this huge personal brand here and you got your PhD, you're a Forbes Council member. And I was like, holy moly, you've been busy. So I was excited to have you on the podcast. We do a couple warm-up questions normally, and they're super easy ones here. Just wanted to ask, what's your favorite movie and what's your favorite band or music?
Okay, so I am not a music person at all, but I like some kind of music based on what my mood is. So not understanding much of that. This is the only thing I don't have much grasp or understanding, because sometimes if I'm listening music, I just listen based on my mood. And the other person, oh, did you see how the tones are, how the, you know, this, I can't understand that thing. That's the only thing. But as for movie perspective, two of the movies, I really like it. One is The Pianist.
This is the greatest pianist in Poland, maybe the whole world.
No one plays Chopin like you.
And one, Life is Beautiful.
Meet a real-life Prince Charming. He has met the woman of his dreams, and he'll do everything in his power to sweep her off her feet. Now, his fairy tale life takes a serious turn.
I love that both of those movies, both are on the, an amazing thing is that both are on the same topic. That was on a Holocaust, but the, how they directed, how the actors, you know, act over there, the, you know, the drama they created and over there, it was so amazing. And I love both of those movies.
Yeah. I've seen The Pianist. That is a, that's a great movie right there. That's a heart.
Oh, it is.
It'll pull at your heartstrings, but I haven't seen Life is Beautiful. I need to add that one to my list.
It's the same topic, but that's a kind of emotional kind of like as well. But there is a lot of other movies as well. I watch Bollywood movies. There's some good ones over there as well. But I love enjoying, you know, watching, going to theater. And that's my best time to go relax. That's the only thing when I relax, I go to theater. Otherwise, I'm always staying unrelaxed mode or hyper mode or something. So yeah, I enjoy the movies.
Are you watching any shows on Netflix or Amazon or anything?
Yeah, I do watch some of the shows whenever I get time. I watch that red light, green light one. What was that? Squid Games.
감당할 수 없는 빚을 지고 삶의 벼랑 끝에 서 계신 분들입니다.
무궁화 꽃이 피었습니다입니다.
어, Squid Games,
yeah.
I love that.
I watched that. I really love those. But the last one, I think that was a more kind of like a realistic based that I couldn't tolerate. So I only watched the first season.
Oh, I didn't know that was the second season. I need to up my Netflix account again. I normally just hop around to the streaming services based on what I want to watch, and that, you know, I'll just binge on whatever it is, cancel it, move to the next streaming service.
Yeah.
I do like the Bollywood movies are showing up at American movie theaters quite a bit lately and just showing up in your feed. And some of the Bollywood comedies, like the action comedy movies, are so funny. They're absurd. Like the heroes that in the fight scenes, they just go so over the top.
Oh, yeah. Fight scenes are actually very, they made it very serious. Yeah. But when I sit with my daughter and watch it, she said, "Oh my God, that's so funny." I said, "They are very serious about it."
Yeah.
They can hit with one punch the whole of the whole, you know, people. So,
yeah.
Kalani's back! Cut kar chuka hu main.
Yeah, stuff like that cracks me up. I totally understand their humor. So yeah, well, let's dive into your story a little bit. Can we go back, like, let's go back pre-COVID, pre-2019. Can you tell us your story?
Well, I'm in this industry, as you know, last time we connected. So I'm in here in data, and most in data for last, it's been 20 years. Prior to that, like since last 5-6 years, especially when my exposure was with EY Ernst & Young, I more go into the leadership roles and some management as well. Prior to that, I was in development and also working as an engineer. When you become a leader, especially in the data technology space, you get more opportunity and lead diverse kind of a teams and transformation projects if you already have done a lot of hands-on. I was very lucky. I work on Python. I work on databases. I work as a data analyst. I work as a DBA role as well, senior leader in analytics, and also the forefront of the development as well, and implement a lot of AI-driven strategies that was not only streamlined project, but also kind of like revenue streams for the organizations. So I have worked with Accenture prior to that as a consultant for 2-3 years, worked with Duke University as a ETL developer, worked with a lead ETL for Accenture for the, I think, Time Warner Cable, now it's called Spectrum, I guess, and also worked with merger acquisitions projects with Duke Energy and Progress Energy, and then AbbVie to Abbott Laboratories when we were separated from Abbott. So me and my team were the kind of like a frontline on this acquisition merger and doing, I was more kind of like a technology analyst. So I do the analysis of Abbott side and AbbVie side and technology assessment and did what exactly we make to make changes in that way. That was a very successful project. And it was a learning opportunity as well. I think every project is learning opportunity for you wherever you work.
No doubt. Yeah. I wanted to dive into your time there, Ernst & Young, because it seems like that's when you kind of springboarded into this new adventure into AI. But before that, tell us about how you landed in North Carolina, of all places. This is going back, you know, I was on your website, like 2004, 2011 time frame.
Yeah, so I actually came first in San Luis, Missouri, stay there for 1.5 years. And then for the projects, I go to Dallas, Texas as well. But landing in North Carolina was a blend of career opportunity and also some personal choices as well. I am originally from Pakistan, so I was initially based in other part of, you know, countries working in tech industries. In Dallas, I had a farmer insurance where I worked first. That was my first job in here in 2004. And then I went into another insurance, most kind of like a work is a contractor. So when some roles came up in North Carolina, especially the most attractive thing in here was the RTP and my admission in North Carolina State University as a master program. So that's the main reason why I moved in here. Beyond the professional allure, North Carolina also appealed me personally as well because of, you know, a very good diverse kind of like a technical community, landscapes, and great quality life is there for both my career and family. So moving there is one of the, you know, best decision I have made so far. And it helps me at providing me a lot of a good platform to grow professionally. And also it offers a kind of like a very warm environment to live in.
Yeah, I love North Carolina. You picked a good spot. When we first met, you were into ETL and data analytics for Arch. Yeah. I don't even think they were using you to your full potential at all. Cause that, I mean, and that's kind of when you decided to do your data science, mini, like the micro master's program at MIT. What made you choose that? And what was that micro master's program like?
I'm the personality that doesn't make kind of like future plans, like after 5 years, 6 years, just go by the flow as well. I completed my MBA and I was thinking to move into project management. Plus, you know, I'm a very technical kind of person. I always want to, you know, understand, do more analysis. On my DISC assessment, I'm kind of like high D. So more kind of like a driver person. So, but after 10 years ago, when I did my DISC assessment, so it's a basically driver or, you know, you can be analyst or influencer. I was more analyst. And I think with the time, how I work in the projects, meet different people that allow you to grow professionally. And also there was several projects that make you understand and like open a new world, because I work as a data engineer all my life, in first 10 years of my life, especially a DBA or data engineer analysis and all this stuff. So data science is the next step. So you can say, or you can say there is a different domain, but how you can make this data more useful and how you can make it kind of like a more revenue perspective, growth perspective, that where data scientists came in. Python is my favorite language. You can scroll the data. You can see what there is so many necessary skills like TensorFlow. That's one of my AI kind of like machine learning tools, and then create a different sets of those data and then explore it and make something else based on the business goals. You can also manage resource effectively and also navigate some of the challenges you have in the leading projects in the dynamic environments. So that was what made me understand. And first I started the course from MIT, for it was just like a short master course where I learned more statistics over there. And meanwhile, I got an opportunity, why don't I do the PhD? And I then started PhD in data science because I wanted to do more into the research. So my dissertation was life expectancy in North Carolina, especially in USA, and the future prediction. It was going good. I started in 2019 end. But when COVID hit, my data was messed up, because if there is any pandemic coming in the future, how we are going to add that variable? And also it impacts a lot for people's lives. So after COVID, actually, the data sets, you see there was a lot of graphs came up, like in this area, the COVID is high and low. This all because of, you know, this data science thing. So this was a main motive that I decided to pursue PhD in data science. And that experience actually allowed me to explore a cutting edge of AI and machine learning, conducting some original researches, and also contribute in this field in a meaningful way. And the process of conducting these researches also give me ability to tackle some complex problems, work with different kind of data sets. It could be pictures, it could be a kind of like a PDFs or something like that, and also develop some kind of innovative algorithms.
So it's crazy that you were looking at life expectancy data and then COVID hits. And so was there anything interesting that you saw happen in the data when COVID hit? And then how long did you follow it?
For 2 years, my PhD was started as for 3 years program, but it took me 4 years because of the process of the conducting this kind of like researches. I use a quantitative research first, mostly getting the data from US census, healthcare, and for example, urban areas in Raleigh or Charlotte tended to have kind of like a higher life expectancy. And also, for example, compared to the rural regions. And this sparked actually my curiosity about the underlying factors contributing to these kind of a differences. So I explored further and I found out additional data sets or those factors, for example, healthcare, income levels, and education, and also environmental conditions. I found the areas with better access to healthcare facilities, definitely, and higher educational attainment, and also higher median incomes tends to have longer life expectancies versus the regions with higher rates of poverty and also lower education levels or access and limited access to the healthcare services also shows the shorter lifespans. There was a hypothesis of how education affects those regions. Better opportunity for education also goes through the better income rates as well, and also your financial situation. I think that also affects a lot. So I conducted actually more detailed analysis, including some regression models to identify what would be the strongest predictors for life expectancy within the state or in the USA itself. So I map the data geographically to visually illustrate there as some disparities and identify any patterns that related to those locations. So in one of the very particular aspect I look into was the role of healthcare access. I noticed that even small increases in access to preventive care services has a noticeable impact on life expectancy in some underserved areas. So that insight actually led me to explore potential policies, implications in that area. For example, expansion of healthcare services in rural areas, and also its significant effect on improving the healthcare and their outcomes as well. No kind of like want to be political, but yeah, this is what I figure out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully that's something AI will be able to help with, is just that access piece, right? If you can have an AI doctor on your phone that will check in, maybe you have to have a meeting once a month and it looks at, okay, how often did you exercise? What have you been eating? How much time do you spend outside? Stuff like that. So maybe that will have a positive impact on just overall health.
Yes, I did some kind of research on it because we can use AI everywhere. We can, but there is some, you can say it called like ethical consideration also came up in the AI, where you can't use AI doctors or AI judges everywhere, but there could be assistance that would be helpful for doctors. For example, if you would be a doctor, you would go for the whole the patient background, what exactly diseases he has. But if what AI can do is, as your assistant, he can grab all the data and give you a kind of like underscoring the, you know, upcoming probably prediction of the healthcare, where the doctor can look into that and address basically how it interconnect with his current healthcare, and also he can use that data to eliminate these kind of a connections, and also it will be helpful for doctor to for a guiding effort to create meaningful changes in their prescription or something like that.
I'm sure there's like HIPAA stuff you got to worry about, but like as an individual that you know controls access to my healthcare data, I wonder if it will be permission based, like, hey, sign this form and AI can look at all your health data. Like it's up to you, right?
Yes,
but I'm sure that all the powers that be will make it harder than it needs to be. Like they'll be, oh no, we can't, we can't allow that, right? There's too much liability and blah blah blah. It's like, no. Just if people want it, let them do it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. So there is a definitely tremendous kind of a potentials for assist the doctors and transform the healthcare in significant way. It has some benefits and also some challenges. For example, as I mentioned, enhanced diagnostic accuracy, and there could be a personalized treatment plans for everyone. It's because if two people have the same disease, it's not necessary that both should have the same treatment plans, because we have to see what the background of their person, where from it comes, what kind of a tolerance level of that person, or how much toxicity in that specific patient. So these kind of things. And it will be time saving and efficiency. That's a very critical factor in the healthcare. If you get some diagnosis early or time, you know, you can live longer. And also predictive analytics is one of the very critical things. For example, AI system can monitor patient data in real time and alerts doctor to potential problems like an impending heart attack or stroke, and it can allow them for a, you know, timely intervention in that one. Yeah, but you mentioned as a data privacy and security with the AI system handling this kind of like a sensitive information for like patient data or HIPAA or something like that, there could be risk of data breaches, and we would like to make sure the privacy and security of the patient information is a significant concern that must be carefully managed. And heavily dependence on technology is also one of a critical lead to a significant problem. It could be, you know, maybe overlooking on the, you know, clinical judgment or something. And one of the thing I actively working in bias in AI algorithms, AI systems are only good as the data are trained on. But if the data, training data consists of some biases, the AI might take those kind of like biases into recommendation. And this can lead into unequal treatment or misdiagnosis, or especially kind of like underrepresented groups or something like that. And cost is one of the things. Integrating AI into healthcare system also involves a lot of cost.
Yeah, we've talked about bias in AI, and especially in recruiting in the past on this podcast. Yeah. And there's like two sides of it, because if you're in a minority group, then you know you're afraid of AI and bias because of there's historical data there. But if you're a white male, for example, you're also afraid of the bias and the rules set in place from DEI initiatives. So like if you're a 50-year-old white male right now looking for a job, you're kind of screwed because no one wants to hire you. They're looking for the DEI candidate. So we're either, it's like we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. And I wish we would just make all these systems like completely colorblind. DEI rules, none at all. Just whitewash all the factors that would be illegal just based on the law and just have it follow those rules and not like tinker with, oh, well, we really want a female here, or we really want, you know, this race here. And it's just like, let's just get rid of all that. You know what I mean? And just choose the best person for the job.
Yes. I actually created one of the, actively work on that as well, one of the HR kind of algorithms where we will scan a lot of resumes, and based on those resumes, we will find out what exactly business need is. And according to that, we will find the best resume. The thing is that over here is whenever we implement such kind of algorithms, like scanning the resume, for example, as I mentioned, HR algorithm, we typically use NLP, which is natural language processing and machine learning to analyze the resumes. They scan for keywords that match the job description, evaluate the structure of the resume, and even assess the language used to gauge the applicant's communication skills. Here it comes again. For example, if applicant is like me, I'm a bilingual, or if applicant is new in the country, but he is really very, you know, let's say company is hiring for data scientist position, HR algorithm might find a programmer who have a really amazing skills in Python and work with a great companies, but on there he found some kind of an error in the resume itself, like spelling error or something. When resume is submitted, it will definitely take it out. But it depends how you train the data. You can skip that part and say, okay, how many mistakes has come up? It's just give you a kind of a report, like this is what we get it from this resume. There is something that I learned from that. We shouldn't over-reliance on the keywords. Resume might be filtered out if it doesn't use the exact keywords in the algorithm is programmed to look for. For example, if candidate is highly qualified and someone might list statistical analysis instead of data analysis, and the algorithm might miss it and it will just take it away. And there could be a lack of context as well. So there is a potential of bias all the time. If the training data used to develop the algorithm contains some kind of like biases, there can be an issue in the hiring process. For example, the algorithm has been trained to resumes with the male workforce that you mentioned. It might be favor resumes that reflect certain, you know, gender, language, or experience. I have worked with some of open source development programs where they are adding a lot of different dictionaries with the ethical standpoints. So whenever we create our LLM, we add those kind of ethical standards. They are for HR. There are heavily research going on in this specific set. So make sure that whenever we train the data, it's going good. And I was seeing today a very funny thing on LinkedIn. They say that they need someone with experience of 30 years in the specific tool, but the person shouldn't be more than 30 years old.
Yeah. I see nonsense like that all the time. Yeah. Entry level, but you know, you need 5 years experience in this industry, but it's entry level. It's like, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough one there. It's a sensitive topic, but I think we'll be able to easily figure that out. Just training the AI to ignore things that they shouldn't consider a factor. But I'm wondering, if you let the natural language processor look at a resume, can it tell, regardless of the name, can it tell if it's a male or a female just by the language that it's using in the resume?
So it's depend on what kind of training you did. Is it supervised training or unsupervised training? Usually as an engineer or data scientist, we would do unsupervised training first. Just for an example, unsupervised is something like where we, for example, if we are identifying a cat, we will train the data and give them all the animals and ask them what is the cat in that, and then see what exactly takes out the cat. If we see like it is taking the real cat out of a cat, this means now we can train the supervised. Now we can train in supervised training as like, okay, the cat has 2 ears, cat sound like that, or cat has the specific characteristics, that's a supervised. So yes, HR algorithms can sometime infer the gender of candidate by analyzing the language used in resume. This arises some kind of a significant ethical concerns because these algorithms are not explicitly, you can say, designed for this. For example, if an algorithm is using the information to make decisions, it can introduce a gender bias in hiring process. For example, if an algorithm have been trained on data from a company where men were historically more likely to be hired, it might learn a favor of resumes that use language pattern associated with men. So even if the company is not consciously trying to hire more men. So yes, it can be, as I mentioned, like it depends how you do it. Some resume might include gender specific information, for example, membership in gender focused professional organization. When we train the AI, so it pick up a subtle differences in the languages that can correlate with gender. For instance, research has shown that women are more likely to use communal language emphasizing teamwork and collaboration, while men might use more agentic kind of a language highlighting the individual achievements and leadership. So phrases like collaborated with, assisted in, or worked on a team too are statistically more likely to appear in resumes for women, while phrases like led a team, managed, or executed might be more common in resumes for men. And this is the AI automatically figure that out by doing the analysis. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's say, for example, like right now in today's market, if I have two candidates, they both have 12 years of experience, they've worked at similar job titles, similar industries, similar skill sets, like almost identical. One's a male, one's a female. Like I would assign more value to the female and more marketability to the female, especially in tech, because everybody, you know, they want more women in tech. So if I had to pick one candidate to move forward with and only one, then I would definitely choose the female to present them. If AI was given the choice based on historical data, it may choose the male. So who do you want to use? You want to use AI or do you want to use, you know, HyperDrive recruiting?
Yeah, I understand. Algorithm might, you know, infer gender from the resume's language while addressing the ethical implications, but it's also important as well that we go it by the human eyes as well. Once this be, you know, established more kind of like if we will have more going by the human flagging process where they can flag it if the specific results that's come from the AI is also, you know, something kind of like review process. So yeah, I think that could be something that we need to establish in the future, especially in the technological environment. We don't have much data for AI. We are still learning. We are in the same, like when COVID came, we told not to go out. And even some people, I say that they do not pick the Amazon package out of 4 or 5 days and then they spray it and then bring inside, right? Later we realized that it didn't work. So because we are still learning, it will take some time, not much, probably 6 to 7 months, you will see a lot of changes in the technology, in the law itself as well, that this is a legally AI or this is not. One of the interesting thing, one of my friend, he mentioned about, he work in Silicon Valley. They are trying to, it is a not kind of like a secret or something, but it's a kind of like a very open, he would do the publish as well. So he mentioned that you see the deepfake where people deepfake the celebrity and use the celebrity name because it looks like celebrity is talking, but actually the celebrity is not talking. They just deepfake them and then spread out the information. Now they can control it because a lot of people can have, you know, use that technology, but they are trying to legalizing AI. So how they can legalize is they will ask celebrity to let their deepfake, they have a price of their deepfake. And if someone use their deepfake without their consent and they're paying them, it could be something legal action we can take against them. So that's a one of the example. And also you can see in the self-driving cars, like this is a one is a great example as well, how AI and tech get better with the time in the development of self-driving cars. So early iteration was were very limited to the technology, but now with AI is very easy to navigate the simple and control environment, but also with a complex scenario. For example, if there's a heavy traffic and unpredictable type of pedestrian behavior or kind of like adverse weather conditions. So these kind of a data keep inserting in self-driving cars is also very helpful.
Yeah, very interesting. I was just thinking while you were talking there, because the deepfake thing, it's like, I was just thinking, man, I should make a deepfake of myself and try to license it. However, I can't. Yeah, you use me as your avatar. And,
yes, they you can know. Have a, like, they can list it all the celebrities, YouTuber, podcaster, who you want to deepfake, and people can bid on you, like, okay, I want to deepfake for you for the specific content. Are you allowed this content to be deepfake with you or something? You will allow it, put your price on, and then
it's
you put, opportunity for everyone.
turn my face into a digital like blockchain where if it recognizes me anywhere on the internet and they haven't registered in the Ethereum contract, you know, it starts automatically bills them or something like that. So that's an interesting problem to try to solve. Now, talking about deepfakes and AI, I was wanting to ask you about your PhD program because it's pretty fresh, right? You just kind of went through it and graduated last year. Are you able to use AI in your homework, like Gen AI in your assignments, or do they have tools in place where they like strictly prohibit that?
Unfortunately, I was not in that time when they're all introduced, especially ChatGPT. My graduation was before the ChatGPT launched. So I was unlucky one. Otherwise, I would choose that.
Okay.
But yes, for now, as ethical standpoint to help with the homework, you remember the plagiarism, how they check, like if you have taken the, now if you see there are some tools, even you can see humanize.ai. So it is a tool where you can see if the specific content is written by ChatGPT or by human. So now they are that kind of like a plagiarism check they have. So AI is a helpful tool. They allow students to use it for, you know, because earlier how we do the research, we go by Google, we go by read the book, we all the stuff. But now if you want to read the book, you can, you don't want to read the book, but you have to read the book in the literature or something like that, you can always make points out of that using AI, text comparison and kind of like paraphrase it or something. So in the colleges and universities, they are doing AI check as well on the assignments, and there is some language and writing flags, like how AI assistant based kind of like a specific writing quality of understanding, and that's something ethical use of basically for educators and students, both of that. But you can't stop it, but they allow it on the specific level, but they also want students to use, especially in writing their own writings and understanding the content itself. Everything you made it by, you know, AI, then where are you going to be learned? And they make it more kind of like a practice test as well, more frequent instead of doing every month, they are doing weekly basis. So these kind of things, and also some awareness. I heard about that some university also started the awareness kind of a seminar for students where they tell AI can help students, but it also can give you a wrong or false information that might not tailor with your education content that how university is providing you.
Yeah. Do you remember those books called Cliff Notes? Mm-hmm. It was like book summaries for people who didn't want to read the whole book.
Yes, they used to sell that. Yeah.
Yeah. It just occurred to me AI put Cliff Notes out of business real fast.
Fast.
Overnight, immediately. No more Cliff Notes. Yeah. Let's talk about your time there, Ernst & Young. You talked about it a little bit, some of the projects you're involved in.
So with Ernst & Young, I have worked some of the really amazing project because I was on AI Ops, and we did some kind of like a predictive maintenance. One of the biggest achievement was creating a chat bot. We were using some services from IBM where there was a doing amazing job, but the thing is that we wanted to use some kind of a ChatGPT bot where it analyzes all of your data from Power BI reports, and then it do the predictive analytics on that one. For example, if we have a specific reports which tells us sales in the, let's say, in Europe, this in specific country in the Europe for all the computers, and we create a report like this much sales has happened, this has happened. Let's say client is asking in within the prompt in the chat box, like, can you tell me what could be the sale for next 2 years? And based on the data, our chatbot was easily optimized the inventory management, and also it tells the sales forecasting and what sector where timing and inventory management are crucial. Even the small inefficiency it can lead to be as some kind of financial loss. So these kind of a detail it give you. So that was one of the really very successful project. It saved a lot of tons of dollars as well. And then we began by gathering vast amounts of historical data, customer, for example, behaviors, seasonal trends, and external factors as well. We use several indicators like economical indicators and, you know, patterns for the stock exchange, for example. So we develop a very unique machine learning model over there that could predict the future outcomes on high degree of accuracy. So this is one of the great project I have worked over there. Other than that, I work with some clients. I work with Lexmark, Oak Street Health, with some other domains as well.
Very cool. Yeah, as you were talking there, I was like, AI just eliminated 100,000 FP&A analyst jobs. Because if the CEO of a company or the CFO can just basically use a chat bot and do all their financial projections for the quarter, the year, 2 years, they don't need FP&A anymore.
It's ChatGPT make you more productive. Some people, they say, okay, if everything that would be doing, for example, everything AI going to be doing or this chatbot is going to doing, what we are going to do, something like that, right? The thing is that we can do more productive things. For example, I give everyone example because I invested myself in that specific technology. I want, you know, others people to know, learn more about that. Quantum AI is one of the, you know, very interested and very potential kind of future where we can invest more ourselves in there. There is involved a lot of things in quantum AI, in financials, cybersecurity. For example, once we are having a really amazing kind of a AI environment and all the technology, there will be a higher chances of cybersecurity as well. For example, if we have an amazing algorithm, why not hacker had those one, right? So future of quantum AI is kind of like most exciting, and they can create a really amazing kind of a blockchain, you know, principles that nobody can break it. They have a more exciting and transforming frontiers in technology. And by combining these kind of a principles, quantum computing with artificial intelligence, we can unlock a very computational power and problem solving capabilities. For example, it can operate some quantum mechanics that allow process the information in the ways that classical computer cannot. It can handle complex calculation at speeds that would take up about classic computer thousands, if not millions of years to complete. When applied to AI, this means that quantum computers can process, analyze vast data set like unimaginable with unprecedented speed and efficiency. So that's why quantum and AI could dramatically accelerate the development of some machine learning models by allowing them explore and optimize with different variables at same time. And it could lead to more accurate predictions, faster training times, and also ability to solve very complex problems that are currently beyond our technology and also reach. So simulations is one of the things where we can apply quantum AI in the industry. For example, logistics, finance, and drug discovery. This is one very important. For example, in the drug discovery optimizations or in the quantum AI can understand the molecular interactions at an atomic level. And it can lead discovery of some new drugs and treatments much faster than how we are using current methods. And it can solve a lot of computation problems, for example, route optimization or portfolio management, more efficiently than the classic AI. It could lead some significant advancements in area, for example, supply chain management. We are finding the efficient routes or schedules can have a major impact on cost and efficiency. So these kind of things, I think we can implement. And then, of course, there will be always a concern about the data security, quantum AI can also impact that heavily because they can potentially break current encryption methods, which can lead to a quantum resistant encryption. So on the flip side, quantum AI could also be used to develop more secure communication channels and systems and encryption techniques, what we are using today. Always, it will be, could be a ethical challenge in there as well, where quantum computers are very powerful as well, but it's also for good and ill in both. You know, it can be crucial for researchers and policymakers to consider the ethical implications when they allowed to the development in the industry. So climate, energy and climate is one of the instrumental development is going on for solving some kind of like a complex energy problem. For example, how to optimize renewable energy sources and reduce the carbon footprints. It can also improve the climate modeling, for example, to understand better and mitigate the impacts of climate changes and how we can make some changes in our lives and in our environment for the future predictions on these quantum AI models.
Yeah, I'm kind of betting on cybersecurity and power generation to be where the opportunities are in the next 5-10 years. And then quantum computing. I think IBM has a quantum computer. Maybe Google has a quantum computer. Mm-hmm. What companies are you aware of that are on the bleeding edge of that?
IBM, and there's a one in, I think, in Switzerland probably, and also Meta, also trying to do some quantum researches as well. And they did not promise, but there I heard some of the news, like they are trying to bring some kind of a quantum AI computer. There was a three of the major things I have heard about as well. But there is in Colorado, there is a quantum AI lab as well. You can go and look into that, what their processes are doing, how they scan the, you know, by the atom level, and they have a really good lab. You can go over there and check, and also especially for the cares, for the school, college cares, they can go there and understanding the possibility, transformative possibility across various industries and different kind of implementation that we can do.
Yeah, quantum computing just boggles my brain. I've watched some videos on how it works and how it's doing what it's doing. And
yeah, Google has really amazing. Yeah, Google also doing really amazing quantum AI research. They have a quantum AI lab. And in 2019, I guess Google has made some headlines, Sycamore, I think, and where they say they achieved the quantum supremacy and they perform calculation in 200 seconds that would have taken world's most powerful supercomputer 10,000 years. That was one of the amazing thing. And then IBM's quantum AI initiative. And there is one D-Wave, I think, quantum machine learning. That's a company, D-Wave, where they are actually specializing in quantum annealing technology that explore how is quantum computers. It can be used to tackle AI and machine learning problems. And also is particularly, you can say, well suited for the optimization problems, which are common in AI applications. So they collaborate with different organizations as well to explore their machine learning opportunities. One of the examples is they use the quantum computing to optimize some algorithms to task, for example, image recognitions and NLP processing, where AI models can potentially solve a lot of problems much faster with a greater accuracy on the traditional methods. So if you see some of the AI-based images, you will still saw some of the flaw if you go deep down. So where quantum machines are trying to make it more kind of like into perfection accuracy. Microsoft also having some quantum AI researches going on. So there's some leading projects from Microsoft itself. For example, they're researching how quantum AI can apply to cryptography and with a more secure encryption method that is resistant to quantum attacks. And they are also investigating how quantum AI can improve supply chain optimization to make the quick decisions really complex one in the faster way, and also doing some kind of like a large data analysis. Then Volkswagen is one of the, they have also started doing quantum AI traffic optimization. Basically, they are experimenting with quantum quantum computing to optimize traffic flows in urban areas. And with quantum computing and AI, Volkswagen is their goal is to develop a systems that can predict and also manage traffic congestion more efficiently in the future. In Portugal, they have using some kind of a quantum algorithm to optimize the routes already for public transport buses. That's one of the things they are actively doing. And they have a kind of like AI-driven traffic data in real time. And then they use quantum computing to suggest the right routes, which reduce the congestion. And also it will improve the travel time for the commuters. So this is one of the real-time example that is being implemented in Europe right now.
Yeah, there's another interesting way that they're doing these logistics and path of least resistance type studies with mycelium. Have you seen that? Like mushrooms growing, and it'll find the most efficient path just based on where it ends up growing. You have to put a framework in place, but and you like design cities and stuff like that. I have to put up a video. But yeah, quantum decryption, we've talked about that with Andrew Wilder, and just as far as like password protection, we're going to have to do away with passwords and just have it all be facial recognition or fingerprinting or something like that. Because a quantum computer, I feel like it's going to crack every text-based password out there. They're all going to be sitting ducks. So, and then as far as like the drug discoveries go, if a quantum computer with an AI is going to simulate the reactions of all these chemicals together and drugs and how they interact with inside your body so that they can pretty much run through clinical testing. Like there's, we're both in the Raleigh area and there's a ton of clinical research organizations around here. I mean, they're probably scared to death or either trying to transition a lot of their studies over to a quantum AI study. I don't know if they'll ever get to the point where they can bypass human studies and just rely on what the quantum AI clinical research study is, the simulation has put together, but maybe it'll get you 80% there. And then you can focus on that last 20%, you know, the humans can do manually. Yeah, that's going to be crazy.
Yeah, there is actually some technical complexity in this thing, especially quantum coherence and error rates. One of the biggest challenge in quantum computing, and what is this actually is to maintain then quantum coherence. And basically, quantum bits or qubits, they are highly sensitive to their environment. Even the slightest kind of like interferences can cause errors, and this is called this specific phenomenon called decoherence. And what it does is as a high error rates make it difficult to perform some kind of like a reliable calculations, which is very crucial to solve some kind of algorithms in AI. So current quantum computers have a limited numbers of qubits, which restricts the complexity of the problems they can solve. For quantum AI to reach it kind of a full potential, we need quantum computers with far more qubits, which presents a significant engineering challenge for so far. With these classical AI algorithms, which are well established, and a developed quantum algorithm that can effectively leverage a kind of like a quantum computing capabilities, is still in an emerging field. There are many potential algorithms for AI that are theoretical and have yet to be practically, you know, implemented, and they are being tested at some scale. We are more into right now, you can say, in hybrid system, like most of the quantum computing system operates in tandem with classical, forming kind of like a hybrid systems. But we definitely need a lot of resource requirement. That's why I would say that people should, you know, invest their time to understand what the quantum computers are and why they need extremely low temperatures close to the absolute zero to function because of the sophistication and their cooling system and the environment infrastructure itself. So there is some kind of restrictions, but one of the main thing that I would see is here is ethical point standpoint. We train the AI system and data coin biases. This is one of the thing. But for example, if there is a ethical concern, especially in the affecting people's life in the drug discovery, if it lead to be some potential problem, wrong data or error or something. So that's something could be a huge kind of like, you know, issue. But that's why they are taking a lot of time, make sure that we are having very good ethical use and purpose for the organization, which are actively working with these kind of organization, Quantum as well. They add there to mitigate these kind of like AI biases and also make sure the future of Quantum AI is also very reliable and there's commitment to transparency and fairness.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if like the first quantum generated vaccine, I'm probably not going to trust it. No.
Of course, yeah.
Right, but
you heard about Neuralink, right?
Yeah, I've heard about Neuralink. Yeah, I saw. They were on Lex Fridman's podcast, I believe. He interviewed some people over a long period of time recently about that. It's pretty cool.
It is. It is only for the, I think they started doing the testing for the people with disabilities, with the spinal issues or something. But in the future, someone of my friends was asking if it will be open for everyone, would you go for that? I said, I will think twice.
No, I'm not drilling a hole in my head. I'm not doing it. Yeah, you're going to have to figure out a way to read my mind without drilling a hole in my head. Yeah, true. I just want the Ray-Ban glasses. The Ray-Ban glasses with the earbuds that's got augmented reality, and maybe it's got some type of, even if it had a hat that came with it that could read my mind, I would go for something like that. But
yeah.
I'm not doing a hole in my skull, in my brain.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your companies. Sarah, so you founded some companies.
Yes.
And I mean, that's amazing. So let's talk about these. Tell us about Iridian Technologies.
Basically, what was early was doing, I was doing multiple things under the same umbrella, which I separated it. So I'm working with Iridian Technologies for the last 5 years. They are more kind of like a HR initially, staff augmentation, but now they are more kind of like a service providers. In Azure especially, they move into so many things and we create a kind of like a vision where we can scale our services into the specific kind of a specialization, which is Azure. So we partner with Microsoft. What we do, we provide a whole services. We establish the whole system within the Azure cloud. We make sure the data is safe and within the premises where they want to keep it. And our whole team will provide them a code. It will be our main vision is to give these kind of a services, not based on per person or per hourly charge, but more on the services perspective, which will be more cost effective. And also the all solution will be under one hand. What happened in the past, what we see, let's say you are in HR, you know, it's really much better than me, because if you hire some person in a specific project, if the feedback is not good, or if there's other person you hire as the feedback is better, both will give you with a different kind of like angles. They won't communicate, they want something like that. But when you have the whole project within your hand, it's your project as well, then you provide them all the technologies or all the, you know, services, more kind of like a centric approach perspective. And once the service is completed, we provide support or something. So this is what Iridian is. We have some clients, Johnson & Johnson, we work with UK DOT system. We have worked with some other small companies as well. We have signed NDA. We can't explain much of that, but yeah, that's one of the things. That's about the Iridian technology. And the other thing is ICE Innovations. ICE Innovations is more kind of like where we created the apps, a Oculus gaming stations. We created a game sold, and it's more kind of like a Minecraft version for the Oculus. Also, one of the venture within ICE Innovation is the ICE, which is an innovative commute endpoint. It's a ride hailing services set to launch by end of this year. And ICE is designed to provide a premium kind of a customer-centric transportation experience with personalized approach. And what ICE apart from other ride hailing services is our focus on this technology, AI technology, to enhance both driver and passenger experiences. And plus, it won't take you only from point A to point B, but also you can have ability to rent your own car on the same platform. And whenever you land into some new place, our AI and machine learning optimize your preferences, and you will ride matching and ensuring the passengers are getting the more comfortable. And if your stay is more than 3 days, it will give you a kind of like cost optimizing kind of a solution based on, you know, your preferences and real-time traffic conditions and everything. So our platform uses the predictive analytics to anticipate some kind of a demand patterns, which helps also fleet management and reducing their wait times for customers. And we are also exploring the integration of electric and autonomous vehicles into our fleet in the future, which is an enhancement perspective after the first launch. And within the ICE Innovation, I have another app that is upcoming is iChef. iChef is an app that connects customers with individuals who love to cook and want to share their meal and want to deliver from the home. So we will integrate the third-party services, for example, DoorDash or Uber Eats or something like that, and they will pick up the food from your home and you will get the homemade cooked food with all preservatives and everything to your doorsteps or your office, or even it's for the catering as well. This app is aimed to bringing the homemade food to your doorstep by integrating some kind of a delivery services. But technology perspective, we are using AI personalized meal recommendation based on your preferences, also dietary restrictions and previous orders, and also based on your healthcare as well. If you want to reduce weight, for example, we will match you there is some nutrition who will give you a whole plan, and you can put your plan over there for local chef to make it for you for a whole month, something like that. So we use machine learning algorithm to match customers with the home chefs who are most likely to meet their taste and quality expectations. In the future, we might go for the blockchain-based system to ensure the transparency and traceability of the food supply chain, which will provide customer more kind of like a detailed information about the region and preparation of their meals. So these are some of the things that I'm working on right now.
That sounds incredible. I'm thinking of a neighbor right now who would be so good at signing up to be this chef. I would probably opt to order food from her like 3 times a week. Now, is this iChef platform, is this available now?
No, it's not. It will be by end of this year. So it will be bringing homemade meals to your door with iChef. When I started this idea and I started working last year, came out there was another application called Chef, S-H-E-F, but that's a limited. And also the one of the thing, they are more kind of like service provider, like Uber Eats. They basically do this delivery services. So they started their own bikes and own kind of like your boxes. They are limited to specific areas. Then when I do work on these kind of things, I also go by the legal policies and the local laws and restrictions over there. So, you know, you can't be a home cook if you want to be a chef. So what we did in our platform, we limited for each chef for 5 dishes a day or something. So in more than 5, they will have, we are going by the subscription model. So after that, they can subscribe, and they want to make more than 10 or 20 dishes, they have to get a kitchen outside of their houses, which we will also will go with the FDA, bringing in the law and FDA, their regulations into the app as well, because that will be a kind of like, it's a very innovative, a kind of like efficient user-centric kind of a solution, but there is always restrictions.
But this is not something that you're going to involve a lot of restaurants in. Like restaurants won't sign up for this. This is more individuals who love to cook, that want to cook for a lot of people and make a living doing that. I mean, it sounds like a neat idea, but yeah, the laws would be tough, because if you're going to make food in volume, you're right, you have to have it in like a commercial kitchen type thing. But there are a lot of those out there that aren't even utilized, so all they gotta do is find one.
If you just remember, you know, when Airbnb came up, the house renting was not an option. There was a, you know, even when something comes, you do some kind of extension or some kind of a, you know, flexibility in law. Because if you see, you know, why this idea came in my mind is because of when I was doing research on my life expectancy, and one of the biggest healthcare factor was the obesity and the reliance of the outside food. And myself, I have a personal experience as well, because I have an intolerance to the frozen food. If I eat frozen food, and I found a lot of people had those, but people didn't know that. That's because of the preservatives they add in the food, and automatically when you freeze it, there is some kind of a bacteria pop up over there anyway. So when they warm it up for you, it's more than 100 degrees and it warms, it died, but still it goes inside your body. What it does, we never know. There's no research happening it. Why not we opt in for fresh food? Why not we opt in organic food? We can do that. We can have a fresh food every day. And there are a lot of people who want to generate an income as well. So let them give them an opportunity and eat fresh food. Because if you have a health, you can do anything. You can be efficient. You can be innovative. You can be, you know, any productive thing you want to do in your life. So instead of spending more wealth and more, you know, revenue on the medicines and healthcare, all the stuff. So it's better to focus on your nutrition nutrition and bring better food at home and fresh and, you know, without any kind of like a preservative that in the future it could end up with some kind of a really bad results.
Yeah, there are some services. Like there's a company right up the road here that I went in and I was looking, I was like, oh, this could be a good idea. You know, they're pre-made meals and there's all these options. And then I start looking at like some of the ingredients and I'm like, what the, they're using seed oils, they're using processed grains. Like this is not even grass fed. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Who's going to buy this? It's not going to make anybody any more healthier than they already are. It's just like, so I would want something that, and I'm an OMAD faster. Okay. I just eat one meal a day, dinner, right? Oh, the rest of the time I'm fasting. So I would just need one meal. Then I would want, you know, variety of whole foods, you know, no seed oils, no processed grains, no gumming or baking agents, no preservative, artificial crap that I can't pronounce, right? Only grass-fed, pasture-raised eggs and meats and wild-caught fish, you know, organic things cooked in grass-fed organic butter and things like that. And that's so hard to find. I can't, bless my wife's heart. She's such a good cook. But we don't share the same standards when it comes from what you cook with, whether it be the flour or what kind of oil you cook with. She's not about all that. She's not going to nerd out on whatever the seed oil is. Like, she doesn't even believe in any of that stuff. So bless her heart. I can't, you know, force her to cook these standards that I want, but I could program this app, you know, to deliver this type of food that I really want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also there is one more feature in the app itself that if somebody is not comfortable that what are you using, or some people, they are sensitive of information that other people provide. For example, I don't believe that if you are saying this is a grass-fed, there will be a 20% cost reduction if you give your own food. For example, I will deliver my whole food grocery list to your home. You have to cook for me. So this way, you are making sure that your food is really what you order for. It will, for example, if you are ordering a pasta, for example, and it's cost about $15 per meal, you say, okay, I don't want you to, you know, choose the ingredients. I will send you the ingredients. Now the cost will be maybe $8 or $9 or $10 for you because you already provided all the, now only the services charges are for the chef's own price, you know, time and all this energy he's going to be invest in the cooking the food, but the ingredient will be yours. So this is a one of the option if somebody want to avail it, if somebody is sensitive of these kind of choices. So that could be also one of the thing we can integrate in within the app.
That's cool. I like it. And then we'll go back to the ice ride and rentals. So you said it's going to be available at the end of this year. And I watched the documentary or the movie about Uber and how they, you pay, basically had to start in certain cities and they grew per city. And then they had to fight basically the government for every city along the way. Yes. So what's your plan to roll out the service?
So thanks for Travis that he did a lot of improvement for us. he cleared the, you know, ground for us to, you know, for further apps. There's a lot of things of flexibility. Even it's because we are launching first in North Carolina. Governor Cooper, he signed the legal agreements in 2015 on any app that will be same like Uber, and also Turo is already out. So if you can rent your car. So what we are doing, we are merging Uber and Turo at one platform, plus some kind of like a personalized experience. So there may be some challenges by bringing two things at once in a one place, because if you see Turo, if you are putting your car on rent, you can't put in for Uber. So this is what their policy is. But bringing an app where you can do both of the things, probably some could be a legal issues or hiccups, but I'm ready for that. I'm okay with that. I think it's a part of anything you work. There is a risk in every opportunity, but there, I believe, this is my theory. I don't want anybody to agree with that, but I believe in this thing. If there is a risk, there isn't a problem, there must be a solution. There is a nothing problem that doesn't have a solution. It could be possible solution is not something that you want, but there is a solution for everything. I have worked with some legal team as well to make sure that in the future, if something like that happen, how to, you know, tackle those kind of problems. Some steps we are taking in advance to make sure the North Carolina state is aware, or, you know, they are okay with these kind of, you know, policies, and how we can make some changes in the bylaws or something like that.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see myself using a rental platform, but when it comes to putting my own vehicle on there, I would be really scared about how somebody would treat my car. I've got a 2005 Chevy Tahoe. right? This is, we're 1 year away from this thing being a classic. And yeah, I love this thing. It's like a Z71 edition. And
awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't let anyone drive this thing. This is my baby. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah. Yeah. I always have a van in my house. Always. I drive my Mercedes E68 AMG. I don't want anybody to touch it. So I'm not going to put on the rental, but for van, okay. I would love to, you know, earn some money from out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't let them touch the AMG. They'll drive it like they stole it. So, yeah. Iridian technology sounds cool. So you're getting into the staffing and professional services. So we might have to do a collab because I started my own agency as well, Hyperdrive Recruiting. So I may need your services at some point in time. That'd be cool to do a project together.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. We have a whole team which are expert in AWS. We recently started having some folks who are expert in AWS, but we had a very good Azure team, which are, we are expert in AppLogic, Logic Apps, and Azure Services. Fabric is one of the new things. Microsoft Fabric, Power BI. These are some of the things that I'm really good in. Our team is really good in that kind of like innovative solutions. So, yeah.
I've heard of Fabric from Daniel Meisler. It's like an AI tool based in Linux command line. What is Microsoft Fabric?
So Microsoft Fabric is a centralized solution where you can store your data, you can transform your data, you can also build a report on that. So it's a kind of like a significant innovation from Microsoft itself. So it handles your all enterprise management and analytics. You can say it's a unified platform where you can just simply streamline all of your organizational data, make it easier to integrate it within the system you want to do it. You can manage it and you can also analyze through across enterprise. So it's basically a comprehensive data platform, brings together different kind of the data, various sources under one umbrella, and it is designed to support different kind of a tool set. It can support AWS, it also do data ingestion, it also do the storages. You can see your data ingestion pipeline, you can see the storages itself, and also it transforms them into the advanced analytics, machine learning, and also visualization. So the platform is built on the top of the Microsoft Cloud infrastructure, Azure, and it integrates seamlessly with other services, which are Synapse, Azure Synapses, Power BI, and Microsoft 365. So it does the data integration really good with the Synapses notebook. You can integrate the, you know, other tools as well within it. So for example, Data Factory or something. But if you have a data source, premises, cloud base, even kind of like it could be ingested, integrated, and transformed, and it have a wide range of data connectors, even Snowflake as well, and also integration tools as well. And Data Lake integration is one of the supportive services that they provide to organizations to store and manage. And also you can build Purview, which is data governance analytics over the as a catalog to the MS Fabric. Because what was happening, why they brought this solution to the market, because there was a lot of environments where people use that hybrid issues. For example, if I have S3 buckets and then I want to transform using Synapse and I want to generate my reports into Tableau, there was a lot of slowdown in processing because this is a hybrid environment where you are, for example, you have a one S3 buckets data, Excel files, and you have a Snowflake and you want to integrate with the Synapse and built your report with a Tableau. Cost was very high. Same thing you can do, let's say in 10,000 per month, but you are paying with these three services about 50,000 per month because of the subscription. Now Microsoft bring all this stuff into one umbrella. Same ease of use, same kind of a collaboration and scalability, make it kind of like a powerful tool for organization to get more data driven. Especially it's a good for not every organization, but if there is an organization which is managing a vast amount of data with across multiple kind of like sources or departments, and they also do the advanced analytics, it's a best platform to use it. I'm not sure if there is any tool that is competed, but probably it will be coming soon. But yeah, this is a one of the kind of a game changer in the world of enterprise data management analytics.
Nice. Tell us a little bit about the other platform that you have. Is called Sprawberry.
So Sprawberry is the future of next year. We are trying to bring it on. It's a little bit complex concept, but I will send you a very kind of like an easy way. Sprawberry is a system where we will bring back the barter system to the market. Let's say you are a recruiter and you really don't want to, you know, spend so much money into the gym session or something, on Sprawberry, you will find a gym instructor who is looking for some other gym instructor for his company. So you can exchange your services. Same like, for example, if you go to American Airlines, you have a points and you change the points into the miles or something like that. Same technology, but we were using the points. Now gym instructor has 10,000 points. You have 10,000 points. Let's imagine you have bought it or you have initially, you know, been given by using the application you accumulated so far. You will exchange your service. You will say, okay, I will let you get interview. I will schedule 4 or 5 gym instructor interviews for you. And can you give me a 2 sessions at a gym, right? And then you give me instruction training for 2 hours. So you will exchange these kind of a services. So basically you are creating a customer relationship. Sprawberry is more kind of like a delivering the barter system with the points itself. It's kind of like a little complicated, especially when you are using the point system and making it as a, because there is so many services, different prices, how you match it. So that's what we are doing, a lot of data searches, make sure it will be cost effective for everyone. So the main purpose behind it, to use of your wealth, if you have something in yourself, you are providing a service and you want to get another service without spending money and saving the money, this is a kind of like a very secure and kind of a cost effective solution for everyone. So this is a, one of the app is a barter system. There's a, so many apps in market, but they are full of flaws. They don't have a point system. They are very slow. They're not efficient. So we are trying to put more kind of like AI based solution, automatically match you with the right services you are looking for. You can also put your events over there, and let's say if I have a concert ticket and I don't want to go, I couldn't go, something happened, I can put as a trade over there, and I want to get another concert probably in the future one with someone else, I will just swap it. So it's a swapping service. So that's why we name it Sprawberry. Spraw is something which is connect and spread all over there, and we use a Sprawberry as icon. So it's a future, but most priority is iChef and ICE right now, but Sprawberry in the future whenever it comes. So I will more kind of like advertise and speak about that.
Good job. You know what? We might need that. I'm telling you, as AI comes on the scene, it starts slowly picking off jobs and we're all trying to figure out what, you know, what we're going to do with ourselves. We may have to rely on a barter system like Sprawberry, you know, just to get anything, because I don't know, we might all run out of money and that'd be the only thing left.
Yeah. And also a main vision behind this specific one was community service. Let's say if I have 10,000 points, for example, my rate is 10,000 points, right? And I'm giving someone my services for 10,000, but I see someone is need or some kind of like I can do community help, I can volunteer my service. And the person who will do more volunteer, we assign that person as iconic of the month because he did more volunteer services. His name will be featured in front of the app whenever you open the app. So this kind of a things we are also adding, and there will be a lot of volunteer opportunities. So these are kind of a, like, you know, vision behind this, the community service, and also, you know, make sure that everyone is having that kind of a space where they can achieve their goals more easily if there is a money is something that is, you know, stopping them to move forward.
That's awesome. So you're big into AI. What advice would you give entry-level folks who want to find a career in AI?
Yes. Actually, I do mentorship as well. I used to do with Big Brother and Sisters as a mentor, but right now I'm working with some other mentorship program as well. To start a career in AI, the journey is very exciting, but it's also challenging as well because it is a constantly evolving. It offers endless opportunities for those who are passionate about technology and innovation. So I would say for everyone, I always say the learn the basics, start building the solid foundations and understanding of the fundamentals of AI, machine learning, and data science. Courses in mathematics, statistics are very important, and programming, of course. There's a backbone of most of the AI technologies. Key topics to focus is to include linear algebra, calculus, probability, and algorithms. And Python, R, and Java is crucial. Python in particular, because it's widely used in AI and has a very rich ecosystem of libraries. For example, TensorFlow, PyTorch, and there's a lot of skill learning, and they were very essential for building the AI models. And the other thing I would say to go more in research is like hands-on experience works on some projects. Theory is important, but hands-on experience is something they can, for example, start working on small AI project. For example, develop a simple chatbot. I also write on Substack, and I write a specific features article where I give an example, like as an AI learner, when you start learning, what should you do as a developer? You can develop a small chatbot, build a predictive model, or create a recommendation system. This is some of the example. I write the code as well for that, so people can learn and understand how they become a productive. So these kind of projects will help you apply what you have learned so far and build a portfolio and to showcase your skills. We are in a very lucky age where we have GitHub and different other, you know, showcase skills, HackerRank, LeetCode. These are the kind of places where you can put your code and, you know, contribute to the open source AI projects as well. That's a great way to gain some practical experiences and connect with the AI community. As I mentioned, the GitHub is one of the full of projects where beginners can start by fixing bugs or adding some new features, and also understanding the AI ecosystem. As I mentioned earlier as well, it's changing a lot. We are still getting a lot of data. It's important to stay updated with the latest research, tools, and trends, follow a lot of AI blogs, attend the webinars, and read research papers. Research papers are really very important to keep your knowledge current, and also based on its backup with the data, and familiarize yourself with the AI frameworks. Like there was so many frameworks in the market and tools like PyTorch, Keras, and TensorFlow. These frameworks are actually very important because they are widely used in industry, and also it familiarity will make you kind of like more attractive to employers as well. And focus on your niche. Niche is something like it's not very important, but it is important something like if you want to specialize in a particular area, for example, NLP, if you want to more focus on natural language processing, or if you want to go into computer vision or maybe reinforcement learning, something like that. So specializing in AI allow you to become an expert. As I mentioned about the deepfake, you know, that's the one of the specific domain as well. So it can open a lot of target job opportunity as well. You can work in healthcare, finance, robotics. Robotics is very interesting to me. Nowadays I'm doing a lot of research on that one. Robotics and neuroscience is my favorite topic too. I can talk for hours on that. And also seek mentorship, do the networking, find a good mentor who is experienced in AI. It could be incredibly beneficial for you. A mentor can guide through your learning, their learning processes, and help navigate, you know, some challenges that they came across, so you can save your time and life, and also offer advice in the career development as well. Focus on your communication skills if you can, and do that, get the advanced degree. Certifications are very important in AI because, especially from the recognized institutions, this can help you validate your skills and make you more kind of like a competitive in job market. Consistency is the key. Be consistent and patient. So, and for anything, so then you can get to the realistic expectations.
Would the advice be the same if you were like for people later in career that maybe their job might get eliminated by AI? Would you suggest that they transition their skill set into more of an AI skill set, or what would your recommendation be for people later in career?
I think not only starting your journey in AI, but also learning more about gaining a hands-on experience, build a strong foundation, not only for the, you know, entry-level people, but also for everyone like myself. I stay committed to learning. I still learn. I still go to HackerRank and LeetCode and write my codes over there and, you know, participate in the coding. Not necessary you have to win all the time. So sometimes failures are actually one of the key to success as well. So keep coding. Coding is also very important. And not for just for your work, but also for your mental logical foundation. My son, he's 7. I sent him coder school for 2 years. And I have seen he's not any technological expert or something. He's not going to be write any program. But the thing is that it creates a logical flow in your brain, which basically, if you understand brain, if you read neuroscience, you will understand that learning new thing, how it impacts your neurons and neurocells, and it kind of like a broad-mindedness in your own brain, and you can learn more better. It's kind of like a muscle. You know, more you train your muscle, you more you get better and strong. So I think learning for everyone is very important, especially whether if you are in medical field, even if you are in HR, for example. You don't necessarily have to, you know, be a coder, be learning the coding, but at least you should understand the foundation. If you talk to someone to hire someone in the future as a developer, for example, if you don't know about it, how are you going to, you know, access that specific tool set? So I think some kind of like a learning for everyone is a need of this time, especially in AI, because even if you are a cook or chef, learn, because AI can give you better recipes with the nutritions. And one of the funny thing I will tell you, because I am an analyst, I do a lot of analysis, even for the simple piece of bread. I went to store, there was a two breads. I do also intermittent fasting. So I was thinking which has a less calories, plus also less carbohydrates, says over there, but both were the same. Then what I did, what is a multigrain? So I was thinking, which one should I get? So what I took a picture and I sent to Meta AI. I used that one, the Llama 3 that recently launched. I give both information over there and I say, which one is better for me? I'm doing intermittent fasting. It's tell me each or every nutrition thingy over there and tell me this one is the correct way if you are doing intermittent fasting. And I was not going to choose that for sure. But after that, it changes my mind. So learning is AI, and not only learning coding, but also understanding to use these kind of tools is one of very important skills for everyone.
No doubt. I need the glasses. I need the AR glasses so that I can look at the bread and just talk to the AI when it's on my face.
Yeah, I bought those Ray-Ban Meta one, and I thought that whatever I say, they will answer me. The only answer what is in that has been trained, but still this, I think I need to update it or something. I want to, whatever come in front of me, I took a snap and I asked it, what is that? So what is flower quality? What is specific plant? So yeah, that's not far away. I think there's this something, privacy policies that stop that to doing so, but I think they are still working on that.
Future's crazy. My daughter, it's funny that your seven-year-old goes to the coder school, because that's an idea. There's one like so close to my house, so maybe I should try to get my daughter involved in it. I was thinking that because whoever the CEO of NVIDIA said, you know, you don't need to learn how to code anymore, but that may be true. You don't need to, but you're right. It teaches you how to think in a very methodical way.
Yes.
So logical, it is still important.
Yeah.
Yeah, logical way. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be a good idea. We're not going to give up on coding just yet. So that's good.
Yeah. Process is always, is because if AI is there, it can tell you everything, but you have your brain too. You have to keep it sharpened all the time.
Yeah. Ever since like when we first met, I feel like you were a little more reserved, and now you seem to have hit the confidence lottery, and now you have a personal brand and everything. What was it that allowed you to shift into more of a personal brand and a CEO type mentality that you have?
Yeah, the people who know me 10 years ago, they don't believe it's the same person. They say, are you become AI or something like that? So the thing is that I had a really very good mentor, and he told me about a lot of things. And I have always this opportunity to learn from others, from my failures, from others. So I learned two things that actually take me kind of like, you know, because I'm a kind of like introvert kind of personality, but I move into the shift myself because I started communicating a lot. I start opening up a lot, and communication and consistency. These were the two keys that make me success towards the confidence, especially if you are a communicator. All the information are not on the theory. All the information, if you are doing PhD or something, everything is not on the research. When you talk to someone, understanding their angle and also accept that with open-mindedness. Like, for example, if you are telling me something and I learned something from you, right? So I am adding some more theory on my brain. This way you can be more confident that, oh, you have this information. If you don't have information, you won't be confident to talk. So I started getting a lot of networking with a lot of people, talking a lot, and also be consistent on whatever I'm doing. It could be anything. For last 3 years, I'm continuously doing strength training, going to gym every second day. So 2 days I take rest, but for 4 or 5 days I go to gym. And that's also increased a lot of productivity and kind of like, I can also start learning neuroscience as well. So that make me understanding how our brain works and how we can make it more better. So those principles, basically, I start applying in my life for the major changes in Ernst & Young when I started that. And my mentor was over there. So where from I start learning to, you know, towards success. So yeah, here I am.
Well, I'm a fan, and you, I mean, it's awesome what you've done. And yeah, I'm rooting for you. You let me know how I can help you.
Sure, definitely, definitely. We all, this is how we, you know, we when we meet, I have a belief in this thing. When we meet someone, there is a purpose of that, to collaboration, to help each other, to, you know, work together. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love that. So I want to give you a chance to ask a recruiter any question that you want, like a ask me anything session. Do you have any questions for a recruiter?
Yeah. Will you recruit me for any other project in future?
I'll do my best. You will be at the forefront of my mind, especially if anybody's like, hey, we need a consultant to come in and help us with Microsoft Fabric. You know anybody? I'll be like, actually, I do.
Oh, yes.
I got the best person ever for this.
When I was working with EY, I worked with HR as well, where we were hiring a engineer. And in 6 months, we interviewed about 8 to 9 people within the organization, and 3 of them gave us the date. And on the date of joining, they just say, no, we get the better offer. So then we have to start the again, you know, all this process. So how you handle these kind of experiences? Because I was really lost in that process and I give up. I say, okay, we'll give someone else this kind of a thing. I can't deal with that.
Yeah. Wow. So if you're a company that is routinely seeing that, you obviously going to have to adjust your salary ranges to meet the market, right? Because if you're coming into competitive situations and losing every time, how many times are you going to lose before you're like, okay, we're going to have to up our salary range here for this role? Yeah. But if you're a candidate and you're dealing with a lowball offer from a company, we're seeing a lot of that nowadays because companies are putting out lowball offers because the market's cooling down and they're aware of what's going on. And there's people that are have been looking for a while. So the thing I would recommend for candidates is to just, if you get a lowball offer, just relax, right? Don't get upset, right? Don't take it personal. The company isn't evil, right? It's not that the company is evil. We have to see it for what it is, right? It's a test. They're just testing to see if you may accept it. So, and more than likely what's kind of happening there is there's one decision maker in the process that kind of saw this request come through from the hiring manager. Hey, we'd like to make so-and-so an offer, and they may send it to HR and copy some people. And other people have to get involved at that point, right? HR, finance, maybe somebody in executive leadership. And it only takes one person to say, you know, that's what they're looking for. This number looks kind of high. Do we know if they would take less? And everybody's like, nah, I don't know. They just put this number in the box. And it's like, well, what if they were just shooting for the moon here? What if they just saw our salary range here posted in the job ad and they're just quoting the highest number? Like, why don't we, why don't we try to offer them 20K less and see what happens? Okay, fine. So when you look at it from that, may have been what happened. And the company's not evil. They're just testing you. So you can approach it like, so if you do get that offer, your gut instinct is, oh, I wasted so much time in this interview. I'm shocked. I'm offended. And you're so turned off. You don't even want to work at that company anymore. Hide those feelings, bury those feelings, right? And approach it like you're shopping on eBay or Amazon, right? On eBay, there's a bid. You know, you can bid a lower number or you can click this number and buy it right now, right? Yeah. And Amazon is all about, you know, one click buy now at this number and it makes it super easy. So you do kind of want to help this company figure out what your one click buy now number is, right? They put a bid in, but this is not your buy now number, right?
Yeah.
So now you get to take your time, right? So you can reply with something kind of like this, right? I'm excited and grateful for the offer. Since it is on the low end, I'll consider it as I continue interviewing with other companies next week, right? I plan to have a final decision by, you know, the end of so-and-so, pick a date, next Friday, all right?
Yeah.
If you'd like for me to cancel all my other interviews and accept the offer with your company right now, I'm expecting this number or higher. I hope we can agree on a number that's fair for both parties, but either way, I'm grateful for the offer. And just leave it like that, right? You didn't decline it. You're just not accepting it right now at this bid. And then you get to see what they're going to do now, right?
Yes. This is really very amazing, you know, advice, especially the part when you say that if you want me to cancel my upcoming, you know, interviews, you are showing two things, one of the transparency and also very good communication skill. And also on the other side, if the hiring people, you know, they really need someone and they want to see, okay, let me do a little bit negotiate on the price, you know, the person is worth it. So they will also, you can then opening a door for a very good positive communication endpoint. So this is amazing advice. I really love it. I love that how you paraphrase it. You know, if you want me to cancel the future ones, this is the what my timeline is. Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, thank you. And you use that tactic whether you have these other interviews or not, right? Because really all you're doing is just delaying your decision by a week or a week and a half. And then you may get to that next Friday and no other offers have come in, no better offers have come in. And maybe at that point you want to put a serious counter down, or maybe that's your best offer and you're going to accept it. Right. But at least you, you know, they're testing you and then you also tested them.
Yep.
But the main thing is don't get offended and upset by it because they're not evil by doing it, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. That's why I say open communication and broad-minding and listening others with open mind is one of the big statements. People think it's just saying listening other with open mind. No, you have to be patient. You have to be a little bit tolerant and trying to understand why other people are using this specific kind of argument. Maybe there is a point in that. And a lot of things get easy after that. This is what I have seen. I being very argumentative in my one of the phase of my life, but I have learned that instead of being self-defensive, just listen to another person and actually you start learning and stay committed on that learning process and you get more better yourself personally and also professionally. So this is one of the examples you just give. Amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there's a life hack. Don't take anything personal.
Yep.
You know, what would Jesus do, right? What would Jesus do? That's something I follow. I don't know. Do you have a saying like that? Because I know you're from Pakistan. I don't know what your religious, you know, leanings are, but do you have a saying like that?
Like what?
Like, what would Jesus do, right? Because you're trying to approach every situation with a mindset of forgiveness.
Yeah, not specific this one, but in our religion, I'm Muslim, so forgiveness is one of the things that we focus a lot on. Even in the version in Quran and Hadith, they say a lot to focus on, you know, forgiveness. If somebody has done even the wrong thing with you, try to understand from their perspective and forgive them and give them a second chance as well. So that's, I think, a lot of religion, even in Hinduism as well. They also, you know, their books also promote this kind of like a learning. Yeah.
I think it's in all their religions kind of. Yes. They all have a similar message.
I think religions always tell positive things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about today that we didn't get the chance to chat about?
No, I also want to hear your story a little bit, maybe more briefly, that how you come into this specific, you know, your own company, podcasting, how you come into that point, what make you go into this specific process. This is amazing. I love your podcast. I actually went through some of those. I'm not ADHD, but I had some other things to do, so I got distracted and went over there, but that was so amazing. I hear a lot of podcasts, especially related to quantum AI. And also some of the neuroscience related as well. Every night I spend 1 or 2 hours instead of watching some Netflix, at least 4 to 5 times in a week or at least 4 times in a week, I hear podcasts, different podcasts. And I just try, and it's just a really very amazing learning opportunities. Like in the past, they were in books, they were talking to someone or something. Podcasts is one of the new way to, you know, to learn and understand. So how you come into this one, this line?
Yeah, good. Good question. I am a YouTube junkie and I follow so many podcasts and I love podcasts because I mean, you just learn so much. And I was posting content on LinkedIn that was more like recruiter content, silly recruiter videos and kind of things that seemed to be getting a lot of attention from the recruiting community, but not so much like the clients, right? My target audience, my ICP. So I was like, well, I need to do something for the cybersecurity and software engineering community. And, you know, what better way than to do a podcast and interview people and let them share their story. And then I get to ask all the questions that I'm curious about. And then other people may learn something from it. It's like, there's no way to lose here.
Yes.
And I think the fact that I listen to so many podcasts just kind of gave me the courage because some podcasts are great. Some of them aren't great. It depends on the guest and the mood and the vibe.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. You know, they don't like the podcast. You just scroll right by it. Not a big deal. Yeah. So
that's my favorite quote. Who cares?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, one of my favorite quotes are, even if 99% of the people on earth hated you and everything that you did, that would still leave at least 70 million people that loved you and everything that you did.
Yeah, so just focus on,
just focus on that and you'll be fine.
Yes. You're right. I have the same kind of a mindset. If everybody hears me, there is someone who loves me for sure. And I love myself. Don't think about others.
Right. Yeah. You love yourself and that spills over. If your cup is full, then you got enough to spill over and maybe someone else's cup will fill up just because of your extra, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And as far as like the company goes, you know, Hyperdrive Recruiting, I've been wanting to start my own company for years. I mean, this probably the thought of it started pre-COVID. I was going to wait and do it after my kids were all in public school and my wife could start working again, and that would relieve a little bit of pressure there. But you know, the job market, especially in tech, it's been a rough year, and I was cut from JobBot just due to production, and I fully expected it to happen.
Okay.
Just because of the situation. And I was kind of resistant to switching to a different industry because I love tech. You know, that's it. I didn't want to do accounting and finance. I didn't want to do legal. You know, I didn't want to shift. And I just went down with the ship, and I'm going to ride the ship back up to the surface too whenever it comes back, because it will come back. So I was going to do it anyway. I just chose to go ahead and do it sooner rather than when I really wanted to do it later. And I've been the happiest I've ever been.
That's great. That's super awesome. Yeah, because I love the name Hyperdrive. It's giving you kind of like understanding. Like it tells the whole story, you know, what is going to be do. So it's kind of like positive as well. And also it gives you some kind of energy and into say, okay, yeah, I need to go there, you know, that kind of a feeling.
Yeah. So are you a Star Wars fan at all?
I wish I would be. I only watch one movie so far, and I love that in theater. But I don't get time to, you know, do that. I'm so kind of a distractor. Whenever I open the TV, and I think that I'm going to watch today, you know, Star opening. I will subscribe as well to the one of the channel where all these Star Wars movies come. But every time I open there's some YouTube kind of a, like, you know, same like your podcast came up. I said, okay, let me listen this first. And then I go. But I love the any kind of like a fiction stories. I love to, you know, watch that in theater only. I watch sometime at home as well. There was a one recent was going some kind of like related to the snow or something. I forget the name. I watched that last time. I love that as well. But I like fictional a lot.
Yeah, I love the story.
The technology has also came up. Yeah.
Anything sci-fi, really.
Yeah, sci-fi fiction, exactly.
Yeah, Star Wars just happens to fall into the sci-fi and wouldn't be one of the earlier ones, the first ones that I saw. But yeah, most of the stuff that's here in my office either came from my mother-in-law's attic or like my parents found at like a thrift shop, and they're like, hey, I got all this Star Wars stuff here. Do you want this? And I'm like, I was trying to build what my background was going to be, because it was just a wall full of old paint cans. You know, this was like, this is a room inside of my garage. Like if I go through the door right here, that's my garage. And you walk around to the kitchen. The kitchen is like basically right in front of me.
That's awesome. It shows your artistic side of yours, you know. You are it's kind of like you are not only left brain, you are right brain as well. So it's kind of like a mix. That's great. I am also doing painting as well, because it gives you some kind of relaxment. And I see that you find your relaxment in there. This is so amazing. I love that. I love that idea.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun putting it together.
It has a lot of energy as well. You know, when you see these colors, especially your all purplish, I love that.
It stands out in a video, I think. And then every single person I've ever met that's actually in cybersecurity also loves Star Wars. They may not love the Disney Star Wars, like the new stuff, but everybody loves the classic Star Wars.
Okay. Know? Yes. Yeah.
Everybody. Yeah. So, you got to watch them. You got to watch them, Sarah. Let me know your thoughts whenever you get through at least the original six, and, you know, watch them in order that they came out, and then watch 7, 8, 9, and then you can get into some of the new Disney shows and such.
Okay. But my favorite, I will do that.
My favorite were actually.
In the next talk, we will cover some kind of a Star Wars as well, for sure. I will tell you where I am. Yep.
Definitely. All right. Well, hey, I think I've kept you long enough. It's been fun. Thank you for coming on, and been a great conversation. How can people find you, Sarah?
LinkedIn. I live over there. And on LinkedIn, I have everything. So I write blogs over there. You see my newsletter over there, Tech Spectrum, plus my website, sarachaudhary.com. That has everything. I write blog. I also do Substack as well. So I write some kind of AI Frontier is Substack name, where I put all my articles related to the AI and how be so productive in that domain.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm going to subscribe to all of it. I think I went through your website, clicked on every site and followed you and subscribed to everything that you had.
Thank you so much.
I'm a fan. So continued success to you. And I can't wait to put this out. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Blake, for your time. And I really appreciate you, all the questions. And you are like one of the really, you know, a person that I love to like heartfelt thanks to, you know, you on this one. So thank you so much. And I hope we talk soon and work together as well. Once ice will start running, I'm going to move forward to looking to hyperdrive to get my folks out here.
Oh, I'd love to help that. Yeah, that would be 100% on board. So yeah, I'm excited. So thank you, Sarah. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.